Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today is New York State Senator Dave Valesky. Senator Valesky represents the 53rd Senate District, which is composed of Madison County and parts of Oneida and Onondaga counties, including the majority of the city of Syracuse. He's vice chair of the Senate Health Committee and was a founding member of the Independent Democratic Conference, a group of Democratic senators who caucus on their own, but who are in a coalition with the Republican Party. But all that is changing. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Grant. Nice to be here.
And let me apologize both to you and our listeners for my cold today, but we will soldier through. Let me start with the question that I just alluded to, that the reporting in the last few days is that the IDC, the Independent Democratic Caucus, the IDC, has disbanded and it's rejoined the Democrats. Correct?
That is correct. Okay. That is correct. About a week ago, I guess it was now, the eight members of the Independent Democratic Conference, we have folded back into what many refer to as the mainline Democratic Conference. And I think there are a number of reasons for that. But if I could just share what I think is the most prominent reason and really the priority of the effort. If we go back to the beginning of the IDC, and we've talked on this program a number of times about why the conference was formed way back in 2011, in the immediate aftermath of two very tumultuous years in which the Senate, which the Democrats were in control of the state Senate in 2009 and 2010. Mm-hmm. I think it was a very important step. And for the last seven or so years, I think was extremely effective. We were able to accomplish a number of progressive goals, whether it be the minimum wage, whether it be a paid family leave program, the most robust program in the nation, raising the age of criminal responsibility, and other issues. We were able to push the majority Republicans in a more progressive fashion than would have otherwise happened. I think the real change, though, Grant, as time wore on, was really less about what has been going on in New York State and more what is going on in Washington. And the election of President Trump was really a change in many ways. And I think specific to the state Senate underscored the importance of Democratic unity standing up to many federal policies that run, I think, counter to New Yorkers, whether that was the so far failed attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act at the federal level, the tax changes, which, in my opinion and many opinion, have impacted New Yorkers very differently than many other states, repeated attacks on immigrants. It became apparent that that Democratic unity in the New York State Senate, again, even though we're not federal government, became more important than really it had ever been long before that. So I think that's really the primary reason why the change came about.
Did you perceive, related to that, among Republican senators that some were being pulled in those kinds of directions because of the election of Donald Trump or the politics that surrounded that election? I mean, is there something tangible that you could point to say, oh, it's pushing the Republicans this way, so we need to be more unified in what we're doing?
Well, I think it's certainly up to the Republican members of the Senate to determine where they are in relation to the president. That's their decision to make. Those are their politics. I think our politics as Democrats, and I think the governor has been very out front and forceful on the issue of pushing back against federal changes, specifically as they relate to New York State. And he spent much of certainly the last four months or so now since the passage of the federal tax law to advocate for, and I'm pleased that I know we'll talk about the budget in a bit, but it ties directly into pushing back against the federal government. So New York State, for example, just one brief but very important example, the cap on state and local tax deductions, which your listeners are certainly very, very familiar with. That's an issue that is unique to New York State. We're one of the only, if not the only state that has that. And that cap now is going to have serious consequences on New Yorkers' tax liabilities. So in this recent state budget, we were able to take actions to disconnect state taxes from the federal taxes in regard to that cap. We were able to set up funds by which taxpayers can contribute to education and health care as a way to protect them from some of the negative changes of the federal tax law.
Because so they still get the charitable contribution.
That's right. That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. So, you know, these are things that have affected the state of New York greatly. And I think that's where, you know, we as Democrats, I think the refocus has had to have been around those issues.
You know, the reason why I asked that question is because when you mentioned the connection with President Trump, it got me thinking right away that New York Republicans often are quite different in their policy positions from the more conservative wing of the Republican Party. And that is something that distinguishes it. I mean, you can just see it in the kind of budgets that pass with, you know, Republican support even before the IDC. So that's why I'm curious about, has that affected them in any way? And it doesn't sound like that's the issue. It's more just a sense of Democrats really having to circle the wagons.
That's certainly my sense. The wagon circling, I think, is really sort of the preeminent reason here. You know, and as far as you raise an interesting issue, we live in a state where we have an assembly that has been overwhelmingly controlled by Democrats for many, many years now. We have had a Democratic governor for 10 years now. And the Republicans in the Senate, therefore, the need to compromise at the end of the day, we have split control of government. So there has to be compromises that are found. And, and those compromises have to balance the needs, certainly, of Democratic perspectives from the Assembly and governor's point of view and, in a sense, Republican perspectives from the majority Republican Senate.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with State Senator Dave Valesky. One of the reasons you alluded to this for the original formation of the IDC was a perception of dysfunction in the Democratic Senate conference. And we don't need to relive all of those. Let's just stipulate that that was one of the reasons why this group decided they needed to form. Do you see now a distinct difference in the way that the Democratic leadership is guiding and organizing the Democratic senators, that they've sort of figured out that problem?
I do. First and foremost, many different senators that are in Albany now than were 8 years ago. So there's been quite a bit of changeover in a legislature, by the way, that's not always known for very much turnover.
Right.
There actually has been a fair amount of turnover over the last couple of election cycles. So there is new leadership there. That's, I think, significant. Much has changed, certainly, from those days. Certainly the leadership from the executive branch of government is very different. This was before Governor Cuomo's term in office. That was a particular period in time, going through the national economic recession, for example, the most difficult economic challenges that the nation has experienced since the Great Depression. So lots of challenges both on the macro level and also internal to the Senate on the micro level in terms of the individual senators who were there. So much has changed since then, and I think that gives hope in terms of moving forward.
Now, there are some political observers that attributed the timing of this reunification to the pressure of progressive groups in the state. I suppose that could be related to what you said about the need for unification in light of President Trump. But some observers have attributed this to the pressure of progressive groups in the state, including primary challenges to people in the IDC, including a primary challenge to you, and now Cynthia Nixon's primary challenge to Governor Andrew Cuomo, and she's clearly challenging him from the left. Any truth to that as driving the timing of this reunification right now?
Well, it's a good point. I've heard that as well, and that speculation. The only thing I could add and to that point is the fact that each and every one of us who had primary challengers announced prior to that reunification continue to have primaries, even though that action has been taken. So I think a lot is made of that particular issue. The fact that not that much has changed around that issue is in terms of whether there are primaries or not really indicates to me it is more of the global issue of standing strong to changes at the federal level. And I think that's really the primary reason, not only for the change, but in addition, the timing of the change as well.
Now, there's another theory about this, and that is that the reunification is the result of recent reporting on IDC members getting leadership stipends that at least on paper were attached to different posts than those that were being held, or they were for positions that were not made public. And that includes your stipend for duties as vice chair of the Senate Health Committee and for a position that you held, you know, while the IDC was in existence, the senior assistant majority leader. Does that factor into the decision?
I don't think it does at all. In terms of the stipend question, I continue to serve as vice chair of the Health Committee. I do not receive additional compensation for that. Did at one point in time. The comptroller has determined that those won't be moving forward. I have received a stipend for a leadership position in the Senate moving forward as a senior member of the Senate. I think the one thing that is important to underscore through all of that, however, is that also as part of the budget, a commission has been established to look at the whole issue of legislative pay, right? So the base pay of the legislature has been flat for 20 years now. And the commission will be charged with looking at things such as not only base pay of legislators, but also additional payments for leadership positions, those of us who have additional responsibilities outside of our own district, as well as the per diem system, for example, that legislators receive. So I think the time is right for a top-to-bottom review of all compensation issues in the legislature, and that's going to happen as a result of the commission that has just been established.
And then my last question on this topic, and we will move on to other things, but it's also been said among similar kinds of circles that have made the observation about, well, it's because of the problems with the exposure of the Lulu is what it's called, you know, the compensation in lieu of salary, that, hey, this promise has been made before. The IDC has said it was going to do something like this in the past, and then it didn't get followed through. So is this really a done deal?
Yes, and the proof of that, I suppose, will be when we return to session next week. So we are currently on our mid-session break, if you could call it. The budget process and budget itself has been completed. We have the post-budget legislative session that will pick up next Monday and run through mid-June. And I fully expect when we do return to Albany that members of the former Independent Democratic Conference and Mainline Conference will be sitting together on the floor of the Senate and then conferencing with each other.
Is there anything that could happen that could blow it up?
Not that I can imagine.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with State Senator Dave Valesky, a former member of the Independent Democratic Conference and now a member of the Mainline Democratic Conference. He's also the vice chair of the Senate Health Committee. All right, so as promised, we will talk about something other than the dissolution of the IDC. Let's talk about the state budget. It just passed on time. I think it was a day early, in fact.
It was a day early, yes, it was.
So what would you regard as the most important highlights of the contents of the budget?
I think there are a number. We touched on one earlier, certainly protecting New Yorkers from many of the negative impacts of the federal tax changes I had mentioned earlier today. You know, education is always a critical, critical issue. We were able to, in a tough budget in terms of the fiscal situation that the state finds itself in, we were able to raise state aid for education by about $1 billion while keeping within our self-imposed 2% spending cap, which is, I think, critically important but often lost, the fact that for 8 years now, self-imposed fiscal discipline has made a difference in terms of the health of New York State budget. So educational increases to all districts, City of Syracuse, I like to point out, certainly because they're often in some of the greatest fiscal challenges. We're able to help out with about $12 million more over the previous fiscal year, which is critically important. But whether it's urban education, suburban education, rural education, I think we were able to have a very positive budget there. From an environmental perspective, one of the most important issues, Grant, that I think of, and you know, if we stop and think of the kinds of things that we take for granted living where we live, when we get up in the morning and we go in and turn our faucet on, how many of us really worry about whether or not our drinking water is safe and secure, right? My guess is probably not many of us. But as a state senator, I think about that, and I think about it in a number of ways. A couple of years ago, in my role as vice chair of the health committee, the situation in Hoosick Falls with a PFOA contamination, mm-hmm. we were able to hold hearings and create in last year's budget a $2.5 billion water infrastructure fund to help communities across the state to make sure that no other community has to go through what Hoosick Falls and the residents of those communities. This year, we were able to appropriate $65 million that will be used to directly combat these algal blooms that have developed on a number of upstate lakes. And certainly Syracuse residents will remember last summer in Skaney Atlas Lake, the source of the city's public drinking water, the real concern of the impact that could have had on our drinking water supply. So, you know, I think that's critically, critically important. And it's a huge success of this budget, and I was pleased to be able to participate in that. Many other issues, just one I'll single out. You know, the opioid crisis is real, and it's severe all across New York State. We were able to increase residential treatment beds, direct more resources toward treatment for opioid and for heroin abuse. I serve on the task force that was able to do some very positive work around that. So the state budget, I think, has a number of positive things for Central New Yorkers and all New Yorkers, and I was pleased to have supported that this year.
Now, there are some observers, and there are news outlets, including the New York Times is one of them, that saw in this budget more evidence, of the feud between Governor Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio over who's going to be the top progressive leader in the state, and some also presidential jockeying that goes along with that as well. And so that was in provisions like, well, you mentioned some things about the taxes, but the provisions like the state oversight over the city school system, the money for the city's public housing authority, and then forcing the city to contribute funding to fix the subway system. So these were all seen as like jabs of different ways toward Bill de Blasio. Did it have that kind of feel as the deliberations unfolded? Was that part of the dynamic that you sensed?
You know, you hear about that all the time. You certainly read about it in daily publications, particularly downstate publications. But my focus has always been and always will be on my constituents. And you identified the 53rd Senate District earlier. So that's where my focus is and my concerns are in a legislative session and certainly in a budget process. So when I have the opportunity, for example, to continue a program that I started with the Manufacturers Association 2 years ago, which is create an apprentice program. Many of our manufacturers are telling us that the greatest challenge to their continuing to be able to be successful, ironically enough, is not taxes necessarily. It's not energy costs or workers' compensation costs. It's the labor force. We have an aging workforce, particularly in the manufacturing sector, and there are not the young people to come and fill those jobs. So I was able to secure about $1 million in this state budget to continue a very, very successful apprentice program for the manufacturing sector here in Central New York. So, you know, while all those conversations and certainly elected officials from other parts of the state and need to fight for their priorities, and senators from New York City certainly fight for the subway system, you know, as they should. That's their responsibility. But my job as a central New York senator is really to focus on things like quality education, job opportunity, economic development opportunity, the environment, as we just talked about, agriculture programs. And we were able to restore a number of important dollars for agriculture programs. And that's what I'm going to continue to focus on.
But building off precisely that point that you're just making there, I wonder whether that rivalry didn't become a political distraction, you know, that didn't serve the state's best interest, in particular, you know, interests of districts like yours, that if this thing is going on and you've got this focus on all the things that you just ticked off, it seems like there's a disconnect there.
Well, I would think it could become a distraction if one lets it become a distraction. And often I think it's important when you're in the process of governing that you put those distractions away and put them outside of your mind and focus on the job at hand. And again, that job really, regardless of from what part of the state we come, delivering for your constituents. That's, I think anyway, why we all go to Albany in one way, shape, or another, to help improve the lives of our own constituents. So to the degree that again, the media likes to talk about controversy and rivalry and whatever else we might want to call it, you know, the important thing is getting the budgets done in a fiscally responsible way, on time, and that meets the needs of New Yorkers.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is State Senator Dave Valesky. Well, let's assume that the IDC does rejoin the Democrats. This does happen, as you say, it's going to happen. There still is one Democratic senator who caucuses with the Republicans, Senator Felder. And even assuming, and you correct my math if I'm wrong, even assuming if Democrats win the two special elections this month, the fact that Felder does this will mean that the Republicans will still maintain a razor slim control of the body. But I think, and this is the proposition I wanted to put to you and get you to reflect on it, I think long-term, it's pretty clear that the Senate is going to turn Democratic in the next couple election cycles. I mean, if you just look at the state, I mean, you ticked off the number of Democratic governors we've had in a row. It looks like the state's just getting bluer. So, first of all, do you think that assessment is correct? And then if it is, once we do have a fairly reliably Democratic state Senate, what are going to be the most significant new kinds of policy changes that one might expect to come from a state that has a complete Democratic control with the culture that New York has? Well, what's coming down the road? Is it recreational marijuana that's been put forward? You know, give me your sense of the chances of this and then what we might expect come out of it.
Well, I think maybe I'll take them in reverse order,
okay,
if I could.
Sure.
Because some of those issues are many of the issues that progressives and progressive organizations have talked about, whether that be the codification, for example, of Roe v. Wade,
right,
which is obviously a hot-button issue, an important issue, and anticipates potentially some future change on the United States Supreme Court, right? So that's an issue that will be at the forefront for some time, I would imagine. But that's not the only issue. There are voting reforms that have long been talked about in the state of New York. Early voting, automatic voter registration are issues that are perhaps more likely to be considered if, in fact, there's a change in control down the road in terms of the state Senate. Question of legalization of marijuana certainly would be one, and a whole host of others. So there will be those issues that in many cases, I won't say all, but in many cases may have a greater likelihood that they would be approved. The one thing I would just step back for a minute, however, and you're right, from a data perspective, New York State as a blue state, a quote unquote blue state, seems to be getting bluer and bluer. If you're using the measurement, which I think the only measurement you can use is registered voters,
mm-hmm,
right? So,
mm-hmm.
So New York State, Democrats continue to have a greater advantage in terms of voter registration advantage all across the state of New York. I think it would be a mistake, though, to assume that that advantage necessarily means a change or eventual change in party control, either of the legislature or the governor's office. And what I say about that is I have found in my time that elections in the legislature, and in my case, state senate elections, are individual races between one candidate and another candidate. Voters, I find, very rarely go into the polling place and say, I'm going to vote for the Democrat in this race because I want the Democrats to control the Senate. Or conversely, I'm going to vote for the Republican because I want to see Republican control of the Senate. Most voters look at the two candidates, the Democrat and the Republican, which candidate better serves their needs, which candidate speaks to the issues that they believe are important. And that's the way that they decide to vote. So I've heard that argument before, and that very well may be the case if you look at the data points that are out there. But I just caution and would say that it's important to remember that in the case of state Senate elections, we have elections every 2 years, and it's really the voters' choice as to what senators are sent to Albany, and the majorities will be formed from that point.
We only have about a minute left, but I've also got to ask you the question that I've asked, I think, every elected official that's come on the program in the last 2 years, and that's, of course, about I-81 in Syracuse. So very quickly, again, just a little bit of time, what's your position on this? And then, if you could, are you pleased with the way that this deliberation and process of deciding has been happening?
Well, I think the process is actually the most important thing. So I think there's been many opportunities for public input, and I think that's important. And that, I think that has continued, and I certainly would credit the State Department of Transportation for leading that effort. In terms of my situation, my position has always been based on the information that we have been told by the State Department of Transportation, which is that to the greatest degree possible, this community, the greater Syracuse community, needs to reach some sort of consensus. Because if we don't, they have made very clear that this project, which is going to be funded by about 85% federal dollars, the indications that we have been getting from Washington is that those dollars will not be available unless we can find that consensus. So it's very important that we continue the dialogue, get to a consensus, and do the right thing for the community.
And have you put out a public position on it?
I've put out surveys on it, and interestingly enough, split about 50-50 among my Senate district, which I think is quite interesting.
That was State Senator Dave Valesky. Senator, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you, Grant.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The majority, and this will be formed from that point.
We only have about a minute left. But I've also got to thank everyone that's come on the program 2 years, and that's of course. So, again, just a little bit of time. To your position, if you could, pleased with the deliberations of deciding happening.
Well, this is actually the most important. There's been public input, and I think that has continued.